Welcome back to these Crossbreed Holster Studios. I'm Mark Walters, and it's a pleasure to have you here with me today. Sean, we've got a little bit of a loop. If you can fix that, that would be great. We'd like to have that come back to us. There we go. Okay, hey, does anything you heard, Carol, from Alan Gottlieb shock you?
It's almost hard to believe that they could even do such a thing here to us in the United States, you know, 25 cents, I mean $25 on each firearm you purchase is just unreal. And then to tax each individual round is just unbelievable.
Well, when you consider $25 tax per gun inside the city limit that the council controls, this isn't about crime. The root source, in order for this to be effective, they would have to know that the root source of criminals' firearms were being purchased at those gun shops, and that's why they went after it. Of course, it's dishonest to even suggest that, because we know criminals don't walk into a gun shop and buy a gun, because most of them are convicted felons, and most of them can't pass what?
A background check.
Well, wait a minute. They just expanded background checks. Mm-hmm. So if most of the criminals are not buying guns because they are convicted felons and submitting themselves to government background checks, then what's their ultimate goal for a $25 tax per gun? To slow gun sales.
And to scare people.
And to scare people. How would you feel if they enacted a $25 tax on every holster bought within the city of Republic, Missouri? Trent, how would you feel about something like that?
Not good. Not good at all. Excuse me. You know, I worked in another industry before coming to the firearms industry, and, you know, the same thing happened in that industry. They would continue to try to tax something to try to get people to not buy the product, and it would go over to a black market to where they would sell it underground, I guess you might say. And the same thing. They're trying to scare people, like Carol said. They're trying to get people, the wrong people, to not buy the firearms.
Actually, they're trying to get convoluted. Right. They're saying they're trying to get the right people not to buy
exactly.
the firearms.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So that works either way you say it. Regardless of what side of the river you're standing on, the river is still. We know what they're trying to do, and we understand what their goal is. We've got one of the best in the world to discuss this with us, and this is a great word because we're talking about the economics now of what they're trying to do, and I can't think of anybody better than economist John Lott on this subject, the author of More Guns, Less Crime, and Incredible Studies. John, welcome to the program. When we're talking about a gun tax in Seattle, Washington, I really would like to get your opinion on this and really get into the economics of what are they trying to do, or are they even considering the economics of it?
I think it's pretty explicit that they are. Look, it's just not this new tax. Just this last fall, they passed the expanded background check initiative, and even the Bloomberg people were acknowledging that that would add about $60 to $65 on the cost of transferring a gun. So you add those two together, and you're talking about maybe something around $90 that they've added to the cost of transferring a gun in less than a year in the Seattle area. And look, I've run into enough of these guys over the years in the green rooms and in debates, and I'm convinced that the reason why they push for these expanded background checks in general is just to make it more costly for people to get guns. In D.C., expanded background checks add about $200 to the price of transferring a gun. In New York, it adds about $80, and so it varies across states. But I'll just give you a couple simple examples. In 2013, when Colorado passed its expanded background checks, it had a couple parts to it. One was to impose a state tax on each transfer of a gun. And I was talking to state legislators there at the time, and my idea was to go and put an amendment up that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay that new state tax. The Republicans put it up, and with the exception of two pro-gun Democrats, every other Democrat in the state house there voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay that tax. I mean, how many taxes can you think of that Democrats would vote essentially unanimously against exempting people who are in poverty level from paying a tax. In Maryland, in 2013, when they imposed fees for licensing and registration of guns, that add about $300 onto the cost of obtaining a handgun, we tried to do something similar there. The Republicans in both the State House and the State Senate that I was talking to tried to put up amendments that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay that. But again, in that case, since the Democrats controlled over two-thirds of both the House and the Senate, they wouldn't even let the amendments come up for a vote. One of the things that I've learned in talking to these gun control advocates, I say, look, if you really want to get this passed, why don't you pay for it at the cost of these background checks out of general revenue rather than imposing the cost on the individuals who are buying guns? And to take up a point that Mark was just saying earlier, the issue is, who supposedly benefits from these background checks? Now, I personally don't believe that these background checks reduce violent crime. But let's say you're a gun control advocate and you really believe that. Well, presumably then everybody's going to get a benefit in terms of reduced crime if you really believe that. It's just not going to be the people who are buying guns. In fact, the people who are buying guns are the last ones you're going to want to have to go and pay a tax, because they at least are producing a benefit, I believe, in terms of reducing crime for others. And an economist would basically tell you that it's the people who benefit who should be paying for the cost of some government service that's there, and that's everybody. So you should pay for it out of general revenue. Well, I've made that suggestion in green rooms and other places to various gun control advocates over the years. And if you make that suggestion to them, they just go nuts. It's a complete non-starter. They won't even consider it. And you would think if they really believed in that this would reduce crime, and that was the real motivation for doing it, they would say, oh, okay, well, that would make it easier for us to pass something like this. Sure, let's go and look at it. I mean, there's another problem that I say they should also fix at the same time, and that's something that you and I have talked about before, Mark, and that is that virtually everybody who gets stopped by these background checks is a false positive. It's a law-abiding citizen who just simply happens to have a name similar to somebody that they actually do want to stop. And so, but they can fix that. If they could fix those two problems, I don't have any problem in principle with having the background checks. They're there if it makes people feel better, fine. But it shouldn't be the law-abiding good citizens who are accidentally being stopped. And it shouldn't be those are the ones who are paying for these fees and costs. I mean, $90 in Seattle now for going and buying a gun is just outrageous. And the thing is, here's the problem. Who are they stopping? They're not stopping myself, and they're not stopping any of you all that are there. They're stopping poor individuals, and particularly poor minorities, from being able to go and buy guns. And my research, if it convinces me of anything, one of the things it convinces me of is that the people, there are two groups of people who are most likely to benefit from owning a gun, but one of those are the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, and that tends to be poor minorities who live in high-crime urban areas. And so, you know, you're in a city like Baltimore, where now it's $300 plus to go through the licensing process to go and get a handgun. And this year, when we have riots in Baltimore, the police are told to stand down. They're told, don't go into these areas where the riots are. Let the riots occur and just stand by. So we're making it so that these poor minorities who live in these high-crime areas are neither able to go and protect themselves, no, because of this gun control law.
John, I need you to stop right there, if you would. I want to pick that up when we leave. We're getting ready to come back from a break here in just a second, okay? Armed American Radio continues from the Crossbreed Holster Studios with John Lott, debunking the lies and the myths.
As people who carry a gun for protection, you and I both know if we're ever forced to pull that trigger, you know your life will change instantly. Liberal prosecutors, bleeding heart juries, they'd love to make examples of people like you and me. And that's why I rely on the legal and financial backup plan with my membership in the United States Concealed Carry Association, the USCCA. They have a guide that will arm you with 18 proven strategies for effective self-defense, helping you stay out of jail, out of bankruptcy, court and home with your family if you're forced to defend your loved ones with a gun. So if you go to defendfamily.com right now, you can download this free concealed carry guide from my friends at the USCCA. Now, the guide is 100% free, and the 18 strategies it contains could very well save your life. Simply visit defendfamily.com, download your 100% free guide, defendfamily.com. Again, that's defendfamily.com.
As Americans, you have the right to bear arms. You also have the right to have and cook great food. Hey, what's up? This is AAR Shanto, and I just launched a great cooking guide. It's called Try This Dish. Why not spice up your dinner? All you gotta do is go to irfnews.com. It's chock full of recipes, DIY kitchen tips, everything that's gotta do with cooking. That's Try This Dish at irfnews.com. Give it a try today.
Beginning this year, Magnum Research Incorporated, a Car Arms owned company, is proud to bring the Baby Desert Eagle 2 back to the U.S. market. The Baby Desert Eagle 2 offers a double-action, single-action trigger and plenty of firepower. Available in 9mm, 40 S&W, and 45 ACP, several barrel lengths, and either steel or polymer frame, the Baby Desert Eagle 2 is an exceptional handgun value. For more information, visit MagnumResearch.com today. That's MagnumResearch.com. One of the few guns that fits comfortably in your pocket, the North American Arms Guardian 32 ACP is the perfect combination of small size, high quality, and great stopping power. Convenient, reliable, and very effective. North American Arms stands behind the Guardian 32 ACP with a lifetime warranty. With standard capacity of 6+1 rounds in a pistol less than 4 inches in length, the Guardian ACP ships with 2 magazines and offers an optional 10-round capacity extended magazine. For more information, visit NorthAmericanArms.com. That's NorthAmericanArms.com. Small, fast, and reliable. Introducing the new CCP, the ultimate 9mm concealed carry pistol from Walther. The CCP's innovative soft coil gas technology softens recoil and allows easy slide manipulation for greater control and accuracy. The small size, ergonomic grips, and light weight make the Walther CCP both easy to shoot and comfortable to carry. The Walther CCP. Learn more at WaltherArms.com.
Hi, it's Mark, and I hope you're enjoying this week's broadcast. You know, over the last several weeks, you've heard me mentioning a website, USCCAOnAir.com. We have some amazing sponsors here on this program, and one of them, the United States Concealed Carry Association, helped create this program. Since that time, just like Armed American Radio, the USCCA has exploded in growth to become the nation's number one resource for the responsibly armed citizen. The USCCA has also become famous for their promotions, as if you needed more incentive to join the United States Concealed Carry Association. Free guns, thousands of dollars in merchandise, and free ammunition, etc. to lucky promotion winners. You, too, can win by simply visiting the website USCCAOnAir.com. USCCAOnAir.com. That site is reserved for you as an Armed American Radio listener to keep you updated on their latest promotions. Now, I'll tell you about the promos on every program, but you can still check for yourself by visiting USCCAOnAir.com. Don't miss out.
This is Armed American Radio, filling your prescription for freedom every week and giving you a voice. Heard coast to coast on the Armed American Radio Network. Here again is Mark Walters.
In the Crossbreed Holster Studios, coming to you from Republic, Missouri, the real Crossbreed Holster facility. I'm actually in the manufacturing facility of this fine establishment, Crossbreed Holsters, this amazing product, an amazing family, and the amazing crew that brings this product to you. We're going to talk a lot more about that later in the show because we have some announcements. Trent was on the program a couple of weeks ago and teased a new product. I'm actually looking at that new product across the table from me right now. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'm not going to give it away yet. but we'll do that later in the show. Coming up later in the next hour, Neil McCabe will be here, my political analyst and Armed American Radio veteran, D.C. editor, and he's also on-air television reporter for One American News Network, former town hall and human events columnist, again, Neil McCabe. And we'll be talking with Grover Norquist. That'll be a fascinating conversation. And a whole bunch about Hillary Clinton and her tax plans for you and her deep hatred for you as a gun owner. Right now, we're going to continue with Dr. John Lott from the Crossbreed Holster Studios. John, welcome back to the show. And I want to apologize. We are having a delay issue here, so bear with us. And I know listeners might pick up on that a little bit, but we'll get through it. It's not that big of a deal as long as they can hear everything that you have to say. That's what matters. John, when we went to the break, you were talking about minorities and this being the group of individuals, poor urban minorities, who need firearms more than anyone else. Yet the Democrats, who claim to want to help this group more than anyone else, does everything in their power to keep them defenseless. And you were using Baltimore for an example. I'd really appreciate it if you could continue with that.
Right. Well, I'm not sure how much more I have to say on it, but it's just, you know, it's pretty simple. The estimates, people can go and look at more guns, less crime. But you see pretty clearly that you see a much greater reduction in crime when you see additional poor blacks who go and get a concealed handgun permit than you see for other groups. And now, one of the things that you see, just generally I'll talk about, is higher fees for concealed handgun permits.
Right.
You see big variations across states, you know, any place from $6 up to $160 to go and get a concealed handgun permit. Plus, there's training costs and other things that are there. So in Illinois, you're talking conservatively at least $450, maybe $500 to get a concealed handgun permit when you add all the costs together.
That's crazy.
And so the thing is, when you have those higher fees or higher costs, there's two things that happen. One, you have a lot fewer people who go and get concealed handgun permits. But you also change the mix of people who go and get concealed handgun permits. So you'll get a much larger percentage of basically white males who live in suburbs who get it, and not the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime. I'm not saying there's not a benefit to those other, you know, white males who live in suburbs from getting permits. I think there is, but it's not as big of a benefit as when you're talking about the people most likely to be victims of violent crime who have to live in these high crime areas. And and so you don't get, when you have high fees and large, long training requirements, you get a lot fewer people who get permits, and you see less of an beneficial impact from concealed handgun laws, both because fewer people get permits and because the mix of people take out the people who benefit the most from getting it.
John, let me ask you this. Those people who can no longer afford, let's go to, you said Illinois, about 400, or Chicago area anyway, about 400 plus, I think you said that was Illinois, not necessarily Chicago, but 400, let's just say it was $400+ to get a permit. Those individuals who can't afford that permit are the same individuals that are being denied their right to bear arms because they can't afford that permit. Is that process forcing those very people to violate the law and buy that handgun or obtain a handgun illegally because of a desperate need to defend themselves? Do those numbers fall into the mix anywhere?
Well, I'm sure some people who feel the need to defend themselves now become criminals. But, you know, there's a corollary point, and that is, look, the criminals who are there, they're not going through the licensing process. They're not paying the fees to go and get the training and to go and pay the fees to the state. And so what you've ended up doing is you end up disarming law-abiding good citizens relative to the criminals. And so, you know, that's one thing that has to be dealt with explicitly and acknowledged, and that is, why would you want to set up a process where it's you're setting up rules that will explicitly disarm the very victims of these crimes relatively more than you're going to be disarming the criminals who commit the crimes?
Well, I think what that does is, again, is just another another form of proof of what exposes their ultimate agenda. And it's not to control crime. It's to control and eliminate the right to bear arms one step at a time. John, in the essence of time, I want to go into another conversation with you here. And that's, there's an op-ed piece. Well, not only want to have time to go into the op-ed, actually, let's go into the gun control organizations and the left-wing media who are trying to intimidate the Crime Prevention Research Center Academic Board of Advisors. What's that all about?
Right. Well, there have been a couple of gun control groups recently that have taken the time to go and look at our Academic Board of Advisors and to find the contact information for their deans, and are encouraging their members and Media Matters and Mother Jones and other left-wing publications have been, you know, tweeting this out and writing stories on it and what have you to try to get others to join in and email and call the deans of these professors. We have some of the most prestigious academics in the world. Bill Landis is probably one of the top couple law and economics professors in the world. He is a friend of mine. He serves on his board. I've done research with him in the past. You know, I don't think he's going to care one way or the other if people go and do this. But you have other professors. You know, it's just they want to silence people rather than to debate them. And so, I mean, I've run into this at times. I used to have a fairly regular op-ed piece column in the Los Angeles Times. Soros and others would basically coordinate having literally many hundreds or even thousands of emails and telephone calls that would be going in to the LA Times whenever my op-ed pieces would appear. And I remember talking to Nick Goldberg, who was the op editor at the time. He says he loves controversy. But he said, you know, I get like 10 times more of a response than anybody else even gets close to getting for the newspaper. And he said for a while he just ignored it, but then they started going up to the publisher, and he would find that he would be called into the publisher's office and have to spend a couple hours or a few hours every day just dealing with the claims that, you know, the Soros people were making with that. And he said, look, John, I love your pieces, but I just can't spend this much time every time we run one of your pieces going and dealing with this. And, you know, they're, rather than debating the points that I was making, that their desire was just to silence me. And that's pretty much, and I've had that happen in other places.
All right, John, I've got to stop you right there. But what I want to do is close out with that at the end of this hour as using the First Amendment, denying your First Amendment rights in an effort to shut down all of our Second Amendment rights. There's the tolerant left for you. Using the First Amendment.
They're trying to do that to professors right now, basically. And,
incredible. It's not surprising at all. John Lott, thank you so much for being here. Author, More Guns, Less Crime, in its third edition, famed economist, Fox News contributor, and the head of crimeresearch.org. Visit John and read all of his work, please.